we're commanded to serve our families and our communities to the best of our abilities. And, you know, we should take our vocational responsibilities in these areas very seriously. And I think that involves making sure that we create conditions in America that continue to allow religious freedom and allow our Lutheran faith to continue to thrive, and that we can continue to evangelize.
Mark Hemingway talking about his joint presentation with his wife Molly at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The fact of the matter is that on those particular issues of religious liberty and preserving our faith from the onslaught of bad cultural and political ideas, things have never been more dire, and it's more important than ever.
You can meet and hear journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
What's your prognosis on when we will get an equal rights amendment on the federal level?
Well, I would like to see a new beginning. I'd like it to start over. There's too much controversy about latecomers, Virginia, long after the deadline passed. Plus, a number of states have withdrawn their ratification. So, if you count a latecomer on the plus side, how can you disregard states that said, we've changed our minds?
That's Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was speaking and being interviewed at Georgetown Law School. What she said there about the Equal Rights Amendment, a starting over and not counting Virginia's latest attempt to restart the process of this constitutional amendment, has been controversial. Then today, the House voted 232 to 183 to pass legislation that would repeal the 1982 deadline for states to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. What was the Equal Rights Amendment, and why is it back in the news? Joining us to talk about that and the comments made by the Supreme Court Justice, Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist and author of the book, The Education Invasion. Joy, welcome.
Hello.
What was the Equal Rights Amendment?
Well, the Equal Rights Amendment was an effort in the 1970s and 1980s to add another amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It's known as a feminist amendment. The text of it says that none of, I'm paraphrasing here, but pretty close to the text, that no one's rights shall be abridged on account of his or her sex under the Constitution. And it sounds very straightforward, but what it really does would be to erase all distinctions between the two sexes in law. So at the time, for example, it was defeated based on a grassroots movement largely made of women, and led by a woman named Phyllis Schlafly, because it would do things like it could, and very likely would, especially given the courts that we have, require women to be subject to the military draft, erase the distinctions between the sexes and public facilities like bathrooms and locker rooms, and require men and women's sports to be integrated when they're under public institutions and the like.
It sounds to me, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, it sounds to me like the ERA, as it stands in its very, 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 very long and extended ratification process, is hopelessly outdated given the progress of progressivism.
That's an interesting question. It's hard to kind of weigh in on that because right now there are kind of two strands of leftism that are coming into conflict on this very issue. The ERA was kind of an old school feminist kind of idea of trying to just say that men and women are the same. When, you know, all the rights that we have are completely equal under the Constitution, they are not divided on the basis of our sex. So this kind of would introduce a division there where there really is none. But, you know, the old school feminist idea was to try to have men and women kind of be the same in all aspects. But newer progressivism, because of the LGBT movement, is kind of coming into conflict with that by saying that, you know, sexuality is malleable, changeable, for example, the transgender movement. So there is definitely, you know, and some talk among the left about the Equal Rights Amendment now. There's been some concern, for example, on the left side that this amendment doesn't account for people who are female but not biologically female, according to kind of the way a leftist would put it.
What has been made of the comments made at Georgetown by Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Well, you mentioned in your introduction that, you know, House Democrats control the House, and so they passed this attempt to kind of eliminate a deadline that Congress placed on passing the constitutional amendment. And so, but actually the actual text that of the 1970s that Congress passed includes a deadline, and it's really not possible legally for it to be amended without a complete starting over. So really what Democrats are trying to do is to ignore what the law says in order to get, you know, across the finish line something that they generally support. So some people are okay with ignoring the law in order to achieve a goal that they think is worthy, and other people are not okay with doing that same thing. And so when Ruth Bader Ginsburg made her comments kind of being on the side of the law, which is actually unusual for her since she's a leftist justice and the text doesn't matter as much to them as it does to originalist justices, she started to, you know, be under fire for that because her adherence to the actual law was getting in the way of a leftist policy proposal.
You said that the justice, she's kind of breaking with form. Go into a little more detail about that.
Right. Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is known as a reliable vote on the Supreme Court for a variety of leftist causes. And I don't say that just, you know, in terms of the outcomes of her decisions, but also in terms of the way by which she reaches the outcomes of her decisions. So you basically have now a division on the Supreme Court between the justices who say that their job is to stick to what the text of the law says. Even if it's a bad law, you know, their job isn't to determine whether it is a prudent or an imprudent or foolish or wise law, but to say, well, this is the way that the law, what it says, and here's therefore how it applies to the case before us. So that's the traditional way of interpreting law, but there has arisen kind of a new way of interpreting law that allows justices to add a bunch of things to it based on the term for this sometimes used is living constitution. So that's arisen over the past century. And what it's done is allowed justices on the Supreme Court and all kinds of lower courts to basically make law up as they go along. And what that does is remove law from the control of the American people. And it's no longer made through their representatives, people that, you know, they can control and affect. But the law is made and made up, pulled out of thin air. And honestly, in some cases, such as Roe versus Wade or the Obergefell versus Hodges decision, you know, things that do not appear at all anywhere in the Constitution were just randomly pulled out of thin air and stuck into it just because the justices wanted that conclusion to be made. So usually Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a reliable vote for that kind of policymaking, but that's unusual for her, you know, therefore, to make a stand like this about the Equal Rights Amendment. She seemed to do it actually not really based on the text of the law itself, which does forbid pretending that the law didn't expire when it really did. But she did it based on, I know, oh, well, it would be controversial if we did that, so it's better to not be controversial. So it was really more of a political decision for her, even though in this case, the politics actually fit with the law, which isn't usually the way these things go.
Even so, what kind of reaction has she gotten from the left based upon her comments with about a minute?
Well, there has been over the past couple of years a reevaluation of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's record she's been a reliably leftist justice, but one of her fatal flaws, according to them, has been not retiring when President Obama instead of President Trump could have replaced her on the Supreme Court. And what that means is because the kind of law that she does is really, it lives by court decisions or dies by court decisions. It doesn't have to win a broad consensus over time like legislation does that, you know, that has more of the people's voice in it. What that means is everything that she's worked for over her life could very easily be overturned by a Supreme Court that now is tending towards more adherence to the law. And so because the left cares more about doing what it wants rather than what is true, right, good, traditional, you know, fitting in line with that, if, you know, her failure to do what they want doesn't, you know, if she fails to do what they want ultimately and her legacy becomes erased by a stricter adherence to the law, then I don't think they will hesitate to rewrite her from, you know, move her from hero to evildoer in the history. And we've already seen some of that happening in the journalism about her in the past couple of years.
Joy Pullman is our guest. She's managing editor of The Federalist. We're talking about the Equal Rights Amendment and comments made by Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. When we come back, some reasons why even the left opposes the so-called Equal Rights Amendment.
You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Albert Moeller, Brian Wolfmiller, Hans Feeney, and Will Wheaton at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm delighted to be chairman of Preach the Word Project, a project of our Synod to strengthen the preaching of all of us pastors in the Synod. We know how eternally important that is.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Fekencher talking about the new Preach the Word Project.
So we've put together a program of 12 modules that will be coming out this year and over the next 3 years on a variety of preaching topics for pastors to do together with two other pastors, two guys they trust, two guys they feel comfortable with, written materials and very fine video quality materials that are now becoming available.
Preach the Word helps pastors work together to improve their preaching with several resources and by interacting with seminary professors and fellow preachers. Find out more at lcms.org/preachtheword. lcms.org/preachtheword. Preaching is challenging business. We all can use some fresh ideas. lcms.org/preachtheword. Lutheran Federal Credit Union serves the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community with auto, home, and personal loans, debit and credit cards, checking and savings accounts. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org. Good for you, good for the church. Lutheran Federal Credit Union, lutheranfcu.org. We're talking about the Equal Rights Amendment. Joy Pullman is our guest. Joy, you actually looked into some of the reactions to the Equal Rights Amendment from the left. What did you discover there for kind of left's reasons for opposing this now ancient proposed amendment to the Constitution?
Well, I mean, as demonstrated by the fact that House Democrats today passed the Equal Rights Amendment, there is still a lot of support for it among the left. Although, I mean, the fact that Democrats passed this when they only had control of one chamber of Congress, it's kind of hard to tell whether they're just doing it for a show vote, I mean, which Republicans did all the time. You know, when they were in control of the House and Democrats had the presidency under Obama, for example. But it's still, you know, it's widely popular among the left, but that doesn't mean everyone on the left supports it. So, for example, there is a Georgetown law professor whose specialty is identity politics. And he gave an interview that where he was talking about some of the things that maybe people on the left should think about, that their concerns actually may not be well represented by the Equal Rights Amendment anymore. So maybe it fit them better in the 1970s and 80s. But again, as I kind of referred to before the break, you know, the progressivism has progressed and therefore changed. And there's this rift on left about sexuality and gender issues related to the LGBT movement. So one of the reasons that he gave, for example, that people on the left today might not support the Equal Rights Amendment is that it does the identity politics thing. It divides people into groups and separates them and then gives special privileges to one group over another. So, for example, in the case of the Equal Rights Amendment, he said that it gives special privileges to women, but it doesn't give special privileges to gay people, transgender people, you know, racial minorities, you know, and probably identity groups yet to discover. So he said the kind of conclusion of that is if you don't have your own special amendment in the Constitution, then you don't deserve equal protection under the law, which, again, that's kind of actually a reason that identity politics undermines equality before the law, because what it does is rather than saying this one standard applies to everybody, every single person, regardless of what your hair looks like, what your body parts are, what you do in your bedroom, all of that's to aside your person and your rights, you know, are the same as everybody else's. Instead, identity politics says, well, if you fit into some group that has gotten politically active enough and got enough people to listen to you, then you can get some special privileges out of the government. So obviously those two notions are in contest with each other. And that was one of his reasons that people on the left wouldn't support the law. He, in fact, said a kind of surprising thing to hear from people on the left, which is that, you know, if you don't write identity politics groups into the Constitution, starting with women with this feminist equal rights amendment, you know, it's kind of a slippery slope to then, you know, it kind of implies that everybody else isn't equal if they don't get their own special amendment, which is a lot less likely in the case of all these other groups. So he kind of returned to the traditional, you know, better just for us all to have the same law apply to us equally and it be a good law for everybody, rather than having, you know, laws that some people like and other, you know, and that disadvantage other groups.
He also says that the ERA would not apply to many of the inequities that concern its supporters. They don't seem aware of the fact that it doesn't cover the things they're really concerned about.
Right. So the U.S. Constitution originally applied to the federal government, and because of the 14th Amendment, it now applies in a lot of cases, most of the cases now, to the states. But still, you know, writing an amendment into the Constitution leaves a lot of areas of society, you know, that the Constitution doesn't touch, most notably, of course, private business. And there are still some areas of state laws that a federal constitutional amendment doesn't govern. So, for example, a lot of people who care about women's rights issues care about harassment in the workplace. The fact that there isn't exactly 50-50% women and men on major company boards, things like that. And none of that would be addressed under the Equal Rights Amendment because it largely applies to government and especially to the federal government.
Did he conclude that Virginia's ratification recently of the ERA, well past its 1982 deadline, was worth the paper it was printed on?
You know, so basically, no. And that's because, as I said in the other segment, when Congress in the 70s passed, so to pass a constitutional amendment is a very long, involved process that involves both the Congress and the states. And so in the congressional portion of that initiated trying to get this amendment passed, Congress set a limit on the timeline, you know, that would have to, it would only be ratified if enough states, two-thirds of states, agreed to it by a certain deadline. And so that deadline, I believe, you know, was 1979 originally, and then Congress extended it to 1983. It's not even clear if that actually is legally possible. But even if it were, I mean, that's, what, 40 years ago? And it's just very clear, unless you're going to come completely untethered from the law and just make it up as you go along, Virginia can't come and suddenly adopt a 40-year-old equal rights amendment, constitutional amendment. The deadline has long passed, and legally, it really just has to start from scratch.
Do you expect it to be restarted from scratch? Obviously, there's not a lot of legality to many of these elements, and as Justice Ginsburg pointed out, some states have actually withdrawn their ratifications since it was being pushed. Do you expect a complete restart of the Equal Rights Amendment?
No, I don't really. I mean, and the reason for that is because as the left has really moved on from actually following the text of the law, and what their current strategy is has been to run the basically illegal Virginia quote-unquote ratification, and now they've taken that fake ratification to the courts, and what they really want to do is have the courts hopefully weigh in on them, again, ignoring the text of the law and just going with their guts. And so that's kind of where the people who are behind this amendment have chosen to put their resources for the time being. Now, I mean, if the courts slam them down like they should, and honestly, Ruth Bader Ginsburg standing against that tactic should be a pretty clear indication that, you know, even if some lower courts do it, it's not going to pass the Supreme Court. So that basically, you know, really kind of seals the nail on the coffin for the Equal Rights Amendment in the near future. And even if their short-term strategy is to ignore the law, at least as things stand now, its supporters are going to have to go back to the states and start over again at some point.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She is author of the book, The Education Invasion. You can purchase this book and read Joy's columns at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we will talk about a post-Christian view of the body with Dr. Jean Edward Veith, and we'll get a biography of 16th century reformer Philip Melanchthon with Dr. Ken Sherb. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll study the Spirit's work, guide it into all truth. A little while, ask in my name, and the beginning of Jesus' prayer of consecration. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, as we continue our walk through St. John's Gospel on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.